You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Let it go on record. Africa is not a poor country. It is a poorly powered one. From load shedding schedules that rearrange our lives without mercy, to factories standing still, hospitals scrambling for backup power, and children doing homework by candlelight. The tragedy is not that Africa has no energy. The tragedy is that Africa is overflowing with it. In the sun that refuses to rest, the wind that never tires, the rivers that keep moving, and the heat thumping beneath our soil. And yet, our lights still flicker, our countries still stall, our innovation still waits for permission. But what if Africa's power crisis is not a problem, but a portal? A portal into independence, into innovation, and into an economy powered not by politics, but by possibility. Tonight, we're going to talk about green energy, not as a trend, but about it as destiny. We're not asking whether renewable energy is nice to have. We're asking whether Africa will survive without it. And to guide us through the technology that could rewrite our continent's future, we're joined by a man working at the intersection of power, policy, and possibility, Justice Mukwebo. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I am doing well. I hope I'm audible enough. I'm trying to connect my headset because of the rain and the power cuts.
Bad. But you're nice and audible.
What an irony.
Right. So let's start with the uncomfortable truth. And it is the fact that Africa is experiencing an energy crisis. An innovation crisis. Which one is it? Is it an energy crisis or an innovation crisis that is wearing the clothes of a power problem?
I think it's two ways. Okay. I mean, we can half it into two. Mm-hmm. We can say that, yes, partially the innovation crisis, though it's a bit debatable, looking at the amount of things that the African continent and its people have been trying to achieve or achieving. And also we can say that maybe it's on the policy side, we can put it that way, or those obstacles that are lying there dormant that we always overlook. So we can put it in two ways.
Okay, that makes sense to me. If Africa's so rich, justice in sun, wind, and natural resources, why are we still energy poor in practice?
It goes back to the question that you asked. Is it, is it the innovation? Is it the policies? Or is it the people, right? Is it the money, the funding, right? Is it there? Is it not there? Like, it's not even debatable at all that Africa is immensely gifted with natural resources. We have got everything in our disposal in terms of renewable energy that can be utilized in order to take us out of the dark shadow of energy that people should be getting every single day, that nobody in Africa should be sleeping without power. No student should not be able to go to try and study within the sun time frame, and after that they can no longer see, they have to go to bed. So I think it's mostly on policy, on firstly, and also the people that are driving the policy and those that are supposed to draft these policies. And secondly, it's money, right? If there's not enough money to drive all these things, and if there's not money that is being driven into these things, if I can put it that way, then there will always be that huge gap of a lot of Africans that do not have power, that do not have energy in their homes.
Let's talk tech. When people hear renewable energy tech, they think expensive and complicated, and perhaps it is for the average person. But is it still true, or is this the biggest misconception that is holding Africa back?
Well, with the strides that have been, you know, as let me just go back to a bit with COVID.
Okay.
When COVID came out, and a lot of power cuts that were happening during that era, because I think they were even much more than they were in the beginning, in particularly in South Africa, if I'm speaking from that point of view. A lot of people started shifting into solar systems, right? And that huge shift during the COVID period and even after. Now, if you drive around this different shopping centers and malls, you will see a lot of huge solar systems if you're staying in the city centers. And I believe it's also the same throughout the entire African continent. A lot of people in the urban areas now have the solar system. Now, what this has done, it has also lowered the way, because now a lot of people are into the space. So a lot of people are either selling the solar systems or either having them. So the prices are no longer the same as they used to be back then, and even during the time where a lot of people were entering into the space. But the biggest question then comes, are they cheap enough for an average consumer, or are they cheap enough for the middle class consumer, or are they cheap enough for, you know, the top class? So that's where the debate can actually lie. Yeah. I can say they are cheap right now, but for an average South African or an average person in the Congo or in Zimbabwe, they might not be affordable for them, particularly people staying in the remote areas.
Yeah.
But then there's a lot of funding. Like I said, there's a lot of stride that has been coming up. There's funding that was supposed to be put in place from the World Bank and also from the African Development Unit. That is supposed to pump in money, and that money is supposed to go and make sure that people have these solar systems. In the villages where I come from in Limpopo, there's a huge areas, different areas that were installed solar panels in their homes, cutting that cost that may have been to be bared by the people that are staying in those areas. But going back to the question, is it cheap? For an average consumer, someone in the home, someone who's not earning enough, below the, you know, the standard of earning in the in any country, they're still pricey. But for someone who can, who's middle class, they can afford these things easily.
Yeah,
so you can put it that way. It's just a wishy-washy type of thing, particularly for solar system, not talking about the wind energy and also biomass, which can tend to be a bit free. But let me just put it in that instance.
Yeah, and I'm so happy that you're talking about wind and biomass and all of those things. I would love for you to talk about wind, biomass, batteries, solar, in human language. What is actually more viable for African communities right now?
Yeah. Okay, so maybe just to break it down, we've got these different renewable energies.
Yes.
You know, we've got solar, got wind energy, we've got hydroelectric power, we've got biomass energy, and also geothermal energy, and lastly the ocean energy, which we don't really use much. These are just some of the things that as an African continent we can explore. These are some of the technologies, like you were mentioning in your question, which I think I may have jumped a bit. These are some of the technologies that the African continent is looking at, already implementing, different countries, and some not really much in implementation. Let's start with the solar energy, the one that everybody knows. Now, this one, it uses sunlight. We already know that, to make electricity. So the solar panels that capture the light, they convert it into energy or into power that then powers our fridges and charge our phones. And this is widely used. It's the most used, if I can put it that way, in the entire African continent and even in the world. Then you've got your solar geysers, the same that you find on top of the roof of your house, different kinds of them. So let's go to the wind one, which maybe is not really widely spoken of. So the same thing, system that is used by the hydroelectric power.
Yeah.
So this one, it depends on wind. So it's, you will find it mostly in areas where there's like strong winds. So the wind turns the turbines. There's a turbine blade, those big blades that you see. They've got, those are turbines. They are spinned by the wind. And as those turbines are moving, that kinetic energy is then converted into electricity. More like your bicycle.
Yes.
You see those flashes that are on the bicycle when the person is cycling and it's busy flashing. The kinetic energy is then converted into the electricity that makes the bulb to turn on and off. And one of the biggest example with this one is the one that is in Jeffreys Bay in the Eastern Cape. So in South Africa, we're already having such. And one of the biggest is in Egypt, which is recently built, and the other one is in Kenya. So, and then the hydroelectric power, another one that we use in South Africa, in the Harib Dam in the Free State, as well as in Lesotho Highlands Water Project. This one, it's just like a dam that is, has water, and there are also turbines inside that are built on the dam, right? Not the water side, but the dam. So as the water is flowing at high power, it moves and spins those turbines. The same thing with the wind energy. Then the spinning of the turbines, the kinetic energy, then it's creating the electricity. Then there's biomass, which is mostly used by farmers in today's time, right? So the biomass is like using plants, wood, any fossil, like, well, if I say fossil fuel, then I'll be including a whole lot of things and someone will come and shoot me. Let's say organic material, organic matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, organic matter, like plant material, wood, animal waste, it could be your chicken waste. And I was debating with someone the other day that even, you know, our waste, you know, because it produces methane. Yeah.
Food waste. Zero there.
It's about heat. Eh? It's about heat at the end of the day and the methane that has been produced, right? It's more or less smells the same. And let's just cut that one out and take it out of our head, right?
Maybe that was the point all along. We are just late to the party. Who knows?
But then imagine how much energy we are losing.
This is what I'm saying.
Maybe utilizing that avenue.
This is what I'm saying, but it's so gross.
No one will have to know, right? It's the energy. You're not going to smell the electricity that is going to be produced. So all this heat that is produced there, then it makes electricity. So there's something that I was reading about the sugar cane. You know, KZN is big in sugar cane.
Yes.
So they are also trying to get into that space where they use, instead of burning all that cane, then they're going to make the biogas, because there's a lot of after waste that is left. So they want to utilize that after waste, the byproducts of the cane itself, like, and then use it to make electricity in their sawmills. Then the last two is just the geothermal energy. I don't know if you've been to Limpopo. We've got hot springs in Limpopo.
Yes.
And also if from Bilabila until in the north side of Limpopo on your way to Zimbabwe. So these are some of the geothermal potential technologies that can be utilized, but they're not being used. Mm-hmm. However, in Kenya, they are doing this. And recently, there's another power plant that has been approved that is going to be doing this geothermal power. So the geothermal power is all about the heat that comes from underground, the same system that heats up the hot springs.
Yeah.
And the last one is the ocean energy. The same things, the wave, usually utilizing the speed of the wind that comes from the waves and the tides, coming, going back to the wind energy. And there are countries like Morocco that are utilizing this. So this one is mostly for countries that are closer to the sea. Not all countries in Africa, but I mean, Africa is a blessed country. We do have the sea all around us with many countries. And South Africa can also explore this one a lot, because we are the country that has got like ocean on most of its side. So yeah, these are just maybe the few energy technologies and the renewable energies that can be utilized in the country.
Yo, I love the information you're giving us. I actually wanna pick your brain on something. So I'm always curious, right, about how in the past these things were done, and perhaps how people who don't have technological advancements right now can still do this. And maybe this is my scientific brain that is coming in, because when I was studying, everything we first learned from first principles, right? So that's when we do the tech and all these things, later we understand what we're doing. So for somebody who's listening right now in the rurals and have got all these things at their disposal, how is it that they can in a small scale way generate power for themselves using the things that you're talking about?
Okay, yeah, let's go back to two that can be easily used.
Yeah.
The biomass, right? Biomass is the one that can be easily used from the homes. And it's just a matter of, the problem is most people these days are not farming as much as our grandparents and grandmothers used to, right, back in the days. So it's less likely that you will find houses with cows or maybe with livestock that they can use to do biomass, right? So if people are busy doing that, it's a system that right now, the good thing is that people have got a lot of they've got access to the internet. It's a very simple system that you can generate at your home, because you just have to dig a hole, and after digging that hole, well partitioned properly, it will be much easier if they could just see the images of how it's done. I don't know if we're not using our system or our online platforms here. There is a guy in Zimbabwe who's literally doing this in his farm and is able to power to charge his electric small car using the same biomass from the chicken manure that he collects from his coops. He collects the coops and is able to produce a little bit of electricity. Then he charges his car. It's a small car that he charges and then he uses it. So this is another system that the people in the villages who are farming particularly, right, can be able to use this. And even if you're farming, you've got enough organic waste that you have all the time from your chickens, from your cows, from your goats, from the corn that you are going to harvest after this summer season. The second one is solar energy. Although right now, because of so many policies that are coming up and solar powers with the need for them to be registered and to be known by the departments, but most people are in their remote areas. So I'm not saying they should break the law, but in those remote areas, you're easily able to get away from this because already the government is not even providing electricity for you if you're in those kind of remote areas. So solar, you can never go wrong with this wherever you are in South Africa. In most areas, it's hot. Even actually in Africa, it's hot. You're always going to get this, right? Sure. And then also the last one is wind energy. On a day, on a typical day in Africa, there's an hour where you just have wind. So you can actually collect that kind of energy. But the takeaway is for the person to be able to buy these things. Now, that goes back to the question, are you going to be able to buy the converters? Are you going to be able to buy the batteries? But for on essence, these are the only energies that I feel like a typical South African can be able to use, or a typical person from any remote area in Africa, they can be able to use these things. Yeah. Remember that pump, the wind pump that people used to have, they were like in different in farms, like in the outskirts, they would just use them to pump water from the ground. So the same system, but now you're trying to make energy and have electricity with it. So wind is always going to be there. There's always going to be sun, and there will always be biomass products that you can use in order for you to produce energy.
I need those tech geeks, those scientific brain kids in those in the rurals of Africa to develop something for their communities that will help them generate power using all these resources that we have, because I think there's so much potential. But because of our technological advancements, and maybe because we're scared, but also because we're not well funded, they don't pick up steam or take off, because we just don't have everything that we need. And you know, even as I'm saying this, I'm just thinking how much of our problems, of Africa's problem, is actually technology. And how much of it is leadership and systems and mindset?
I think majority of it is leadership and policy and how things are done. If there is more education that is driven into these things, right? Already there is, you know, there's this other system that is done by, I think it's Science Fair. It rolls around in communities for young people to bring innovations. ESCOM was part of it when I was still in high school. So they would go around these communities and young people would participate, and they will be generating ideas of how to solve problems in the community. So that is the part where the government really needs to invest in those talents of those young people, because they're bringing up solutions of things that are happening in their communities, not things that are happening in Johannesburg or things that are happening in Cape Town or in Uganda, in the city Kampala, if I can put it that way, right? They're not happening in the urban areas. They're happening in the communities where the kids are. They're solving, most of them are solving these issues and implementing ways in which renewable energy can be used to solve energy problems, right, in those areas. The policies that have also been set to place, like, for instance, right now, the government wanting to ensure that every person has to register their solar systems. Soon enough, you will have to pay a certain amount. Those are hindrances, right, that causes people to not have this kind of energies that they need to have.
Yeah.
Or maybe you will be limited to a certain amount of solar systems that you can have.
Mm.
Because slowly but surely, you will be getting off the grid. And what does that do to Eskom as an energy provider?
Mm.
It actually steals you away as a customer. Now the entity will not be able to make money. So then there will be those kind of regulations of the amount of solar that you need to have and the amount of energy that you need to use and the amount of this and this and that. So it's mostly on policies that are there. And these policies also affect how money and funding is moved to the people. Because if a policy is prioritizing certain things and to a certain point, that means that even when they're doing their budgeting, they do not prioritize those renewable energy stands that they are trying to bring into the space. And if they are more focused also on growing the urban side of things, the upskirts always remain 10 steps back, and reaching them, it will be much more difficult. I feel like on the innovation part, the technological part, we have a lot that is happening in the African continent. The only thing is just on the policy and the implementing side of things. You can have a million sets of ideas right now about renewable energy, but the fact that will remain is that setting up these things is very expensive. Though the moving forward of things is, you know, it becomes cheaper, but setting it up, it's gonna be a bit expensive.
Yeah, and would you say that is that means then we're late to the renewable party, or are we perfectly positioned to leapfrog all the energy systems entirely?
You know, that word leapfrogging is nice, but not nice at all. You know, it's nice, but not nice. I feel like we shouldn't feel rushed to do these things because we are going to bypass so many parts. Or we will make this green energy to be, I'm always going to go back. We will make it look good in the urban side of things. We'll transform Johannesburg, but we're going to leave a big section of the world around Johannesburg, the world around Harare, you know, the world around Gaborone. Those areas will remain without this renewable energy. The same thing that is happening with Industrial Revolution, trying to leapfrog to catch up to other countries and continents. But us leapfrogging, when you go to visit, you will call these areas what do you call this new stance of of tourism, wellness, you know, this thing. You will call the rural areas a wellness park. You know, I'm going for wellness. What about the people that are staying there? That have to deal with that wellness every single day, using 2G and 3G and sometimes no network. But we're not on that one. Going back to that energy, that leapfrogging statement, I don't think it should be the one that we should be doing. And we are not, I don't feel like we are even late. We are right in time and at a perfect time where, you know, the global stage is looking at Africa at the moment. So this is a perfect opportunity for us to continue from where we left off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, the reason why I say we are not really behind. I mean, let's look at the Redstone power plant in the Northern Cape. That is something that had never been done before in the African continent.
Yeah.
But we have it here. And that is something else. And the technology around it is just awesome, right? The solar plant, the wind plants, we even have a very big solar plant in the country, right, that produces about 500 gigawatts, if not megawatts. It's very big. It's very huge in our country. And I'm not talking about other African countries that are making strides. Like I mentioned, Kenya doing the geothermal energy, right? And also in Egypt, have also having their own geothermal plant that is probably going to be the biggest in the continent. So I don't think we are doing any leapfrogging. We're probably doing things that even other big continents are not doing. It may not be in a large, large scale to a point that it will solve our power problems overnight, but slowly but surely we will get there. We just need to make sure that these things are catering for all the people.
And I'm happy you...
Specific country or the entire continent at large.
I'm happy you're leaving it at that note, because I do want to ask Justice, how can we make it so that there is actual inclusion? How do we make it so that this technological advancement where energy is concerned is inclusive of every area? Or is that just an inequality we're going to have to live with for the rest of our lives?
No, if it's not something that we're going to have to live with for the rest of our life. It all begins with us and also the buy-in of the people that are out there. You know, I don't want to touch that one. It will take us into another whole different conversation. Let me leave it at bay.
Okay.
But yeah, if we ensure that every person in the country is empowered, right, to be able to enter into the space, empowered in a sense of education, right?
Yes.
They are taught, not just the young ones, not just those that are just came out of university, even the people that are already living and they're older, or every person, including every person, they are educated and they know what to do and how to use it. And it will bring everyone into the picture and everyone will want to work towards it. Let's go back to these solar projects. Right now, the plan for Eskom bringing into the picture, or the government, let me call it the government, bringing into the picture all these private companies and private entities that are having their solar plants or solar farms so that they can feed into the grid, right? And, you know, breaking down that monopoly and everything. If the same system can be used in a form of cooperatives in villages, like I mentioned, in my village, they've already started with the solar panels. Though those solar panels do not do much, but they do bring energy to places that did not have energy at that point, right? I would just give it to them in that case. If they had made it a point that they bring people together, say in the villages, they select maybe a block of houses, maybe 50 houses. They bring those people in a form of a cooperative. They have a mini grid with a huge solar that provides energy into the people. And when it provides energy to those people, the surplus energy that is producing, because it's huge, or it's a combination of all those solars and that can feed into large batteries, that surplus energy then goes back to the grid. The grid, if there's any payment, it's paid into the cooperative. The people in that that block, they get money from that, right? It empowers them. It makes them to spark more ideas of how else can they make more money using the same renewable energies that they already have. Even the young ones will start thinking, how can we grow this thing? Now you are bringing them into the picture, into the world of understanding how these things work. But if you're just going to do it at a certain point and other people don't even know what's happening, you're basically leaving them behind. Then that inequality will then be something that is forced for us to live with on an everyday basis, which is basically what is happening right now. Money flows, you hear about crypto, you hear about this, you hear about, right now we're talking about renewable energy. Perhaps maybe this online platform can only reach to a certain point, but it is us then that have to take this conversation and drive it to those people that do not know about it, so they can understand that, okay, there's this and this happening. At the University of Venda, where I studied, there is a biomass project that is done there. but not everyone in the institution knows about it. Even in my class, the only point that I knew about it was because my lecturer was the one that was running the project. It was his project. But had I not been in that class, I wouldn't have known about it.
Sure.
But imagine how many people are farming in Venda. How many people have got cattle in Venda? How many people have got cattle in Limpopo? So this lack of information is the one that may cause us to want to say we are living with inequality.
Yes.
But if the information is driven, then everybody is moving. Everyone in Toyando town is moving. Everyone in the village near the town is moving. Now everyone is doing this. People now start building these biomass small plants, and everyone now is included. Yes, it will not be the same scale, but it can reach to a scale where it is more or less the same, depending on the drive of the people and the amount of money that is channeled to actually grow those people. The platforms are there, the policies may be there, but there's just that mismatch and small gaps that needs to be filled.
Yeah, and you did mention buy-in earlier, and people won't buy into something they don't understand, whose benefits they they don't even realize. So it's true. Education really does go a long way. Sure.
Yeah, that is very true.
Yeah, let's talk economics now. How does renewable energy shift wealth and not just usage?
Okay. We're going back to that example that I was giving. I'm sorry it was too long. Yeah. That example that I was giving, the one that you know, we get to bring back to the grid, right? That sustains the economy, because now you have got less people that may be relying more on the government for funds, because they've got these different kinds of systems that they have at their home that then also have enough energy that they are taking back to the grid. Now you have got more people that are also able to make money through selling their power back to the grid, right? So it grows their side of the economy and also empowers the people that are also selling that energy back to the grid, not only in the villages, but everywhere. Right now, even in people, if you yourself, you've got money, and if it's not really there at much, I'm prophesying that it's coming a lot.
Hallelujah.
You're staying in that Senten home, right? And you don't want anything to do with power cuts. Then you have got these entire solar plants. You're a small family with your partner and whatever that setup that you have. You're not using that all in energy. You get to sell it back to the grid, or you get to share it with umakhelwane. Or if maybe the policies do allow at some point, then you get to sell it to people around you. To people around you. Now that helps a lot, because then the entity itself, if there's any money that the government is pumping into Eskom to provide more energy, will no longer be driven into Eskom. It will be driven into other systems and other departments, which then helps the country's economy to grow better, because now the government is not overburdened by so many people that do not have power, and the grid itself not able to bring energy to the people. And imagine if South Africa as a whole, like the entire country, does pump in more funding into energy production from renewable energy, right? Countries that are around us, because we're already selling our power to them either way. Countries that are around us can then get the power that is coming from us, that is coming from the earth itself, like natural energy, that grows our economy, and spending less, like way less, probably even half of what we are already spending.
Sure.
So what we need to do is just to fix the grid, fix the power lines, and make sure that our grids are working. No more spending money on coal, no more spending money on what you call diesel, and now we're selling renewable energy, growing our economy to the max. Or we can even start doing these plants in other countries. That's a business, right? For the country. We are providing a solution, giving much cheaper energy because we're not spending much on it, and in an instance we are growing our energy, our economy, if we can put it that way.
Justice, do you think that access to clean energy could be the biggest unlock for African entrepreneurs?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's a very very, that's going to be a very positive thing to have in the country, or in every entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Because number one, if we look at it in this way, many businesses were failing because of the rolling blackouts that were happening. And without any other stance to look at it, so how can we bounce back? Now you've got energy that is always there. You've got renewable energy that is always there. Like I said in the beginning, shopping centers already have a lot of solar systems.
They do.
A lot of malls in the country have got so many solar systems. Now that ensures that there is no rotten food in the refrigerators. There is no stopping of manufacturing. Like just a few hours ago, 2 hours ago, I had power cuts here. I was almost about to leave the house because I thought there was not going to be, the energy is not going to come back, right? But now it's back. It's not because of the solar. But I know I can go and shower because we have solar where I'm staying. But we don't have the solar solar geysers. So for the business side of things, because I'm renting here, I would have moved out. Because if there's all rolling blackouts every time, which means I'm not going to bath.
Yes.
Which with hot water, which means I'm not going to cook.
You don't have internet connectivity.
Right? Yes. So then that kills the business. The owner of this place then loses tenants. But if they had solar systems, if businesses have these solar systems or any of those renewable energies that I mentioned, it helps them a lot because they don't have to have a headache or lose money because of the rolling blackout. So this clean energy is good and also good for the climate as well in essence. So they're not just going to be contributing to them having energy all the time, but it's also something that's going to be good for the environment as well.
Which industries do you anticipate would boom overnight or explode overnight if Africa got its energy right?
I think that's a nice one. Now so many things came to my head. I think production.
Okay.
I mean production. Then we don't have to stop because we want to save energy. Production of cars, the assemblies of cars in the country. Sugar production, like I mentioned about what do you call them? The KZN guys that are, want to step into using sugar cane. Manufacturing in general, they won't have to stop, because of saving power and costs and based on using electricity. Those will just continue to work. And if maybe we get to a point where we are more on working 24/7, adopting some of the Chinese systems, then we don't have to stop at night because we want to save energy. Even stores then will not lose out on their frozen stock for it to go bad because at night they have to switch off their refrigerators. They will keep them on because the energy is always there and it's not expensive as much as electricity is.
Yeah.
So I think almost manufacturing systems in Africa, because that's where we are right now, that's where we need to be because we are a growing and emerging continent and country in terms of growth. I think those manufacturing things, manufacturing plants will be the one that will boom a lot.
Yeah. Sure. And Justice, when you think about Africa's energy story, what angers you the most?
The fact that the money is just dangling around and not getting to the solution.
I see even dangling. It's getting into people's pockets.
I don't want us to do a Madanga commission, eh? the fact that the money is dangling, I mean, we should be ahead, particularly on this renewable energy. Like I mentioned about the biogas system that was there at the University of Venda. We should be having multiple of those things, but to set up that thing, it's a bit pricey, right? To eat, caliber in a way that it will produce a lot of energy and for it to pass different gradings, right? there's money that needs to be put there.
Mm.
The money moves around and does not provide a lot of things. Now, let me go back and attack the thing that I was talking about back in Limpopo.
Yeah.
Those solar energies that have been installed, they're good to watch television and to charge your phone, but they won't carry a lot of things. But probably that thing for that one house unit was more expensive than what they actually got in every single unit. So the money floats somewhere else, goes different places, and then when it gets to where it needs to work, it either doesn't work or doesn't do anything, or it does something that does not meet the standard at which it was supposed to. So the same, this problem about money not getting, funding getting to the right places is the problem that the African continent has.
Yeah.
There's no African continent that is immune to this.
Mm.
Projects are there, ideas are there, policies are there that are very good, but the money does not reach where it is supposed to get to in order to solve these problems.
What gives you hope, Ge?
The fact that the global world is looking at us right now.
Yes.
I think that that puts every country's head on, like, how can I put it, on like that edge that people are looking at me. I need to make sure things work, things happen, right? Though that actually gives me an edge to say that we might be able to deal with it. We might be able to get there. It gives me hope in the African continent.
Yeah.
And also looking at the things we have achieved, I don't think we should overlook any of those things where we are currently standing in terms of renewable energy and the amount at which the private people are currently implementing these solar systems in their home. That can also alleviate a lot with Eskom being able to provide energy for those people that it couldn't provide to before. And they can also redirect their funds. Then they can also bring more funding to people to have their own solar plants. That gives me hope to see that people are jumping into it. And right now, as we're standing on a crossroads, if I can put it that way, with a country that has got one of the richest renewable energy resources on the planet Earth, it also gives me hope. But then the hope will always be there as a faith man. I don't know. I don't know if it will actually spark the hearts of those that are supposed to push and move these things to get to where they're supposed to get.
And what is one uncomfortable truth about Africa or that we must face as Africans if we want power without compromise?
Is that if we're not united, if we're not united to stand together and fight for what we want and what we need, then we're not going to move at all. If the top class remains the top class, the middle class remains the middle class, and the people at the bottom remains the people at the bottom without any understanding or unity in between, then we will not get to these full renewable energies. Even the systems that have been put for 2030, we won't achieve any of those things. We won't reach any of those things. Unity is very important.
Yeah.
If in South Africa, we all stand up and say electricity prices are too much, those that are in charge will listen, right? And if we unite here in South Africa and all the other SADC areas, also unite with us, because what's biting us, if we feel the pain in South Africa with so many infrastructure and better infrastructure, other countries in the SADC that are not like us also feeling the bite. If we stand in unity, then the SADC leaders will have to stand up and do something about it. If we all stand in unity with all regions in the entire country, in the entire continent, the African Union has to wake up and do something about it, right? So if we're not united and if we remain divided based on the different classes that we have been classified, then none of these things will work. We won't achieve this renewable energy. I remember the councillor back where I come from, in went the way, because there's a new rollout that is supposed to come because of the new elections that are coming of people that did not get these solar panels. Now, he was saying to the people that when they come here to ask you names of people that needs the solar system, do not agree to the solar systems,
oh.
right? Because the solar systems you're getting, they are not what they are supposed to be. Right? Like I mentioned. So he was trying to get the people to unite.
Mm.
And with one voice, they if they are pushing the renewable energy, then they will at least give you something that is worth what you need to use in your household. Or instead, they should give you the grid power. But there was not that kind of unity of people that were supposed to agree with one another. They ended up choosing something that will not work for them. Because some they different groups, they wanted different things. So if there's not that kind of unity, and if it fails even in grassroots, it fails in the townships, and it fails in the city centers and the city areas, fails in the entire country, then we're not going to go anywhere. As a people, we're not going to be able to achieve and to utilize our renewable resources in the country, in the continent, the rich renewable resources that we have.
Yeah. And, you know, you've been talking about policy so much, it would feel so remiss of me to not ask you this final question. If you had 5 minutes with every African policymaker, what would you say first?
Sorry?
If you had 5 minutes with every African policymaker, what would you say? In fact, we've just got 1 minute. What would you say in the 1 minute to every African policymaker?
Put everyone first.
Ah.
That's all.
Ah.
Put everyone first.
Yeah.
Not just the city centers. I'm sorry. Sorry about city dwellers. Not just the city dwellers. Because most of them, they come from the villages and they're going home in December. Put everyone first. Let us forget about leapfrogging and put everyone first. That's all.
Yeah. And, you know, from this whole conversation, what I've gathered is energy is not just a utility thing. It's a dignity thing. It is education, enterprise, and freedom. Because when you started, you were talking about a kid who knows that they only have a small window to study because the lights are going to go out. People losing their livelihoods because they just can't keep up with the blackouts. So it's really more than just utility. And if every policymaker understood that, then I think we would go a long way as not just a country, but a continent. And I'm so grateful that you came through to share your wisdom and your time with us. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Cheers, Justice.
Okay, bye.
And with that, I am Nompumelelo Lombonani, and I've forgotten my line. I've forgotten my closing link. Fresh Mercy tomorrow, everybody. Cheers for now.
Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.